Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Bernard Malekian, Director of the Office of Community-Oriented Policing, or COPS Program, within the U.S. Department of Justice. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Melinda Balthrop. So, Bernard, you mentioned that the mission of your office is to advance public safety through the implementation of community policing strategies. I'd like to understand the philosophy that defines community policing. Can you tell us what that actually is, and would you elaborate on the three components?
Certainly. You know, one of the interesting things is my career has in some ways paralleled the development of community policing, and it's been interesting to watch it evolve and watch the awareness of it evolve. Community policing, and the COPS office definition, and certainly one that I adopt, is that it's designed around building relationships, building partnerships, number one. Number two, solving problems. Partnerships between law enforcement and the community it serves to address specific neighborhood issues. And thirdly, is an organizational transformation within the law enforcement agency. At some point, and I think this has been the sticking point, at some point, community policing has to cease to be a project or a series of special projects, and it has to become the operating philosophy of the organization. When that transformation occurs, then you can say that community policing has arrived. One of the challenges that the economy has produced in law enforcement, and very often I will have law enforcement leaders come in and see me and talk about, well, you know, I've had to cut my budget. I have to eliminate my community policing officers. I have to cut my community policing programs. I understand what they're saying. But I also understand it means that they're still at the stage where community policing is a project. It's not the operating philosophy of the organization. So I think those three points, I think it has taken a while for people to arrive there, for agencies to arrive there. I don't want to bog down in a lot of detail unless you'd like me to, but I think that for the most part, most agencies, I think, have run community policing and run sort of traditional reactive policing in tandem. And as long as the economy allowed them to do that, the conflict could be minimized. But when you look at what's happened to law enforcement across the country in terms of loss of resources, loss of positions, now they're having to make a choice between how do we integrate that traditional model with the community policing model. And the verdict is still out on how that's going to shape out.
Interesting. So before we delve into specific initiatives, I'd like to get a sense of your key strategic priorities that you focused on during your tenure as the head of COPS. What are they?
Well, there are several. One was to institutionalize or depoliticize the office. This office is not a federal jobs program. This office helps advance public safety. It helps advance the quality of life in neighborhoods, you know, across this country. And it should be evaluated in terms of what it does in that regard. So it really tried to convey that message. Secondly, was to ensure that the office was the voice for law enforcement inside the Beltway, certainly with inside the Justice Department. More than any other single agency, we deal directly with the local law enforcement agencies. Our funding grants go directly to them. They're not in the form of block grants. Our technical assistance projects go directly to those agencies. And not just the director, but the people in this office. We have a number of people with law enforcement backgrounds, a number of people with academic backgrounds who have direct connections. And so this business of being the voice. And thirdly and lastly was to bring this concept of evidence-based practice, and that's not unique to the COPS office, but this idea about what works and what works best and how do we make that part of law enforcement thinking. There's sort of a fourth strategic area that was not – certainly wasn't on my radar when I first came to Washington, but it has quickly become that, and that's helping law enforcement agencies deal with the realities of what the economy is doing. It's producing a profound change, and one that I think, like I said a minute ago, is not clearly defined yet. Its outcome is not clearly defined yet.
I'd like to unravel a little bit because you did mention that the COPS program, the grant program, and particularly the COPS hiring program, it's not a jobs program per se. But can we talk a little bit about it, let our audience understand it a little bit more? And more particularly, How does it seek to increase the capacity for local law enforcement?
I think that's a great question, and I think it really goes back to where we started about the 100,000 officers. And the idea behind the 100,000 officers was absolutely sound, and it was absolutely necessary. And I lived through all of that as a line officer. I was a lieutenant at the time when all that was going on. But the hiring program is quite simple. Any agency in the country can apply for a COPS grant. The life of the grant is 3 years. The agency has to commit to funding for a fourth year at local funds. At various times over the life of the COPS office, there have been phases where there was no match and cap, no local match required, no cap. At other times, there have been both of those present. There are really two main statutory requirements. One is that 50% of the money has to go to agencies that serve populations below 150,000 and 50% above. And secondly, that any state and territory of the United States that has at least one eligible applicant is guaranteed up to 0.5% of the money. It's called the state minimum. What we've tried to change over the last 3 years is the idea was obviously you had to have a community policing plan, what you intended to do, but that was very broadly defined. What we've tried to do over the last 3 years is challenge these agencies to focus on specific community problems that they're trying to address and say, how are you going to address those? The state of the economy has made that approach better, I mean, more meaningful in many ways, because we can't solve, as I said a second ago, like we can't solve everybody's local budget problem. But what we can do is to help you if you want to focus on homicide, if you want to focus on vehicle burglary, if you want to focus on school policing, articulate the problem and articulate, instead of thinking about this as some kind of long-term permanent addition to your department, think about it as a four-year problem-solving grant. And how what you could do with these extra resources over 4 years, what community issue could you address?
We know there's no easy way to assess the extent to which law enforcement agencies are successfully practicing community policing. However, COPS has worked with practitioners and others to develop the Community Policing Self-Assessment Tool. Can you tell us more about this tool, any additional requirements it places on applicants, and how the introduction of this tool captures community policing progress within law enforcement agencies? And also, how does it help COPS grantees?
In some ways, for the longest time, and I don't think it's unique to COPS, the truth of the matter is that we measured the success of our grant programs by, you know, did we get the authorized funding out the door? Did we get it to our recipients? You know, did they spend the money in the fashion that they said they would? In general terms, were they timely? And did we, in other words, manage the grant from a technical process-driven standpoint? The CPSAT, or Community Policing Self-Assessment Tool, is really the first attempt to measure the effectiveness of a specific grant on a specific agency. And so the way it works is that we worked with the Police Executive Research Forum and a number of academics to develop a measuring a tool. It is a self-assessment tool. The agency and its community essentially measure sort of the state of being at the time at the beginning of the grant. The idea is that at the end of the grant, you will take the same self-assessment tool and see if over that three-year period, has there been an improvement? Has there been a positive change? It's the first attempt to really measure that. It is not particularly burdensome. We think it takes about a half hour per individual to complete that form. The number of individuals that take it vary from agency to agency. But we want to see if that tool and that measurement will give us the ability to establish a sort of a community policing baseline. Another thing that we're doing sort of related to that is to try to develop some metrics. I mean, you made an interesting observation and a very valid one, which is that it's very hard to measure the success of community policing. Probably the most common way to do that has been sort of community opinion polls. You know, do you like your police department? That's not a bad measure, but it's certainly not complete. We hope CPSAT is a step in that direction. But another one is we're trying to work. One of the projects that we funded is to try to measure some other, to create some other metrics for how do you measure community policing success. I mean, one of mine, and this is just the Bernard Malekian view of the world and not particularly scientific. But I think, for example, if an agency has a homicide problem and its detectives have a high solvability rate, they are clearing a lot of those cases. That suggests to me that those detectives or the line patrol officers have relationships in the community that is putting information into that police department that's allowing them to solve those crimes. We want to see if that metric is valid and what other metrics there might be to start to develop a scorecard on whether community policing is, in fact, successful.
Continuing down that path, to be a good steward of public funds requires your office to consistently monitor the progress of grants and grantees. Can you further elaborate on your office's grants monitoring strategy? And what have you done to enhance the way that your office monitors grants?
I think, and we think, that the monitoring of our grant dollars, and particularly with our focus over the last few years on specific problem solving, that our monitoring activities are critical. It is not just enough to say, did we get the money out the door and did the required forms and processes come back? We really, we're currently monitoring, for example, over $266 million in outstanding grants. We do this through a series of what are called desk audits, where we sit and look at what the agencies say they're doing. And we also do site visits, where we send teams of people to the agencies to visit them. Currently, this year, we're planning over 150 site visits to different agencies to see specifically what they're doing, not just what the paperwork says they're doing, but are they doing it? There are agencies, and I don't want to identify anyone on the air, but there are agencies who have committed to taking the entire block of COPS-funded officers to create problem-solving, problem-focused units. That's absolutely fabulous on paper. Part of our site visit strategy is to go and look and see what are they actually doing. I believe that it is not enough to say how many officers did the COPS fund the hiring of. We have to say what did those officers accomplish and are the communities and neighborhoods that those officers police, are they safer? So all of that is tied up into our monitoring strategy. You know, one last thing, it's been, you know, a fairly newsworthy item that travel restrictions are, you know, the federal government is under some mandate to, you know, bring its travel costs down. I will say that the Department of Justice has made it clear and the Attorney General has made it clear that monitoring of grants is an absolute top priority. We have sort of exempted monitoring visits from our overall travel cost reduction strategy.
COPS has historically provided outreach to law enforcement agencies to expand the adoption of community policing nationwide. Can you elaborate on how the COPS Community Policing Development Program advances the practice of community policing, and also, what kinds of training and technical assistance do you provide?
You know, the community policing development grants really span a very wide spectrum of activities and projects. One of the ones from this year that I'm most proud of is Hawthorne, California, came up with something called Coffee with a Cop, an incredibly simple idea that if you would allow a format, you'd get a local restaurant to sort of donate some space. You would advertise this, you know, this coffee that the representatives from the police department would be there and people could just come in and have a cup of coffee. I remember when I first saw that, and I don't think I ever said this to the chief, but when I first saw it, I thought, well, okay, this might be interesting, but is it really going to catch on? It has caught on nationwide. I mean, it's exactly what we wanted to come out of the community policing development plans because it is so simple and it is so one-to-one. I mean, at the end of the day, police work is really about relationships. Effective police work is about relationships. And people come in droves to every city that's done it. We have a program in Houston with some kids who were absolutely out at risk. Teens in police school. It's officers and a group of teens, and quite frankly, some of these kids have come down a hard road. But I had the privilege of going to their graduation ceremony with 30 of them. And I think they started with 30. I think 25 graduated. And whether or not, whatever comes out of that, it is very clear. It was very clear from talking to the kids. It was very clear from talking to the officers that they have a different view of each other. I think a lot of these programs that put officers, and particularly kids, but officers and members of the public together, it almost doesn't matter what the program is. If everybody will just stop their role-playing for 5 minutes and sort of see the humanity of each other, I think it's enormously powerful. We funded a project last year, for example. One of the responses to the economy has been some cities around the country forming joint police fire agencies, sometimes called public safety agencies, and cross-training their personnel. It's not without controversy from both the fire side of the house and the police side of the house. But we funded Michigan State to actually produce a national report on where that model has worked, where that model has failed, and why. We think that that report will be enormously valuable to the field, to city managers and county administrators, as they try to make decisions about how to manage their local budgets. So I don't know. I hope that helps.
Yeah, I was wondering, actually, Bernard, if there were other some sort of key success stories that you'd like to share about the COPS program in action.
You know, I think one of the there are so many areas where the infusion of just a little bit of money and a whole lot of time and talent has made a huge difference. I think one area that my learning curve has been very steep about, I knew very little about the challenges faced by tribal law enforcement across this country. It is really not something that a lot of people think about. Certainly was not something I thought about in Los Angeles County. But when you study the challenges that tribal agencies face, and then you look at the COPS office this year put more than $25 million into augmenting the resources of tribal agencies across this country to develop community policing plans in Indian Country, it's been incredibly rewarding. And it's very clear. This is part of this isn't just a COPS program. I mean, there's a White House initiative on reaching out to tribes. DOJ is very much, Department of Justice is very much involved in being part of that. But it is really clear that it's made a huge difference in the lives of some tribes. The crime rates and the rate of victimization, particularly of women in Indian Country, is awful. And to be able to be part of that and to hopefully make a difference is a real challenge for this office and one I think we're up to.
How has the era of fiscal austerity changed the way law enforcement agencies operate? We will ask Bernard Malekian, Director of the Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.